everyone. Julian Charles here of themindrenewed.com, podcasting to you as usual from the depths of the Lancashire countryside here in the UK. Today is the 2nd of October 2015, and I was going to have an interview with Tom Secker of investigatingtheterror.com and spyculture.com, and of course of the excellent podcast Clandestine. And we were going to be talking about the whole Edward Snowden affair and looking back over the last couple of years. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen this week. As it happens, Tom's had a very difficult week this week, and so was not really able to do the recording last night. And indeed, it's just as well, because yesterday I was having one of my vocal problem days, where this problem, which the medical professionals have said there is nothing wrong with me, and I will repeat that, there's absolutely nothing wrong with me, but whatever isn't wrong with me still flares up every now and again and gives me a splitting headache. So it's probably just as well that didn't happen yesterday. So we're going to have that interview in a few weeks from now, and of course I'll let you know when that takes place. So I'm going to take the opportunity to do something rather different. People have asked me how it is that I go about doing this business of producing these MP3 files, and specifically how I go about doing interviewing. So I thought that I would share some tips today for perhaps prospective podcasters, people who are podcasting at the moment, and also that maybe it could be helpful for me, because after I've said what I'm going to say today, if there are people who give me some feedback saying, why don't you do it this way, that could turn out to be very helpful for me as well, especially if there's anything that could save me some time, because I probably do spend more time than I absolutely need to on producing these things. So I'm going to split it into two parts. First of all, how I go about doing interviews, and then secondly, some of the technical things which I think might be helpful to share. So first of all, interviewing. And I'm going to say straight away that in my opinion, and of course this is based upon the way I do it and what I want to get out of interviews, there is no substitute for thought and work. And I think that will become apparent as I proceed with the things that I'm going to say today. That thought and work, in my experience, starts straight away when you're approaching a guest, probably by email. And I find that it works best if you make clear to the person you're writing to that you already have a fair amount of knowledge of their work. Rather than just emailing and saying, I've heard of you, I know something about your areas of expertise, I'd like you to come and speak on our show. I find it's better if you have already read an article or a few articles by the person, or read a book, or you've heard them in debate or an interview. And so you can actually say, I heard you interviewed on such and such a program, and I'd really like to pick your brains about what you were talking about. I find that works better because it shows that you are already engaged with the material before you contact the person. And doing it that way, in my experience, probably about two-thirds of people that I contact do agree to come on the show. So I do think it's worth approaching it that way. And of course, it's respectful to the person that you're contacting. And then comes, of course, the stage of research. As I say, there's no substitute for work, in my opinion. I would say get to know the subject. Obviously, we all only have so much time, but given the time that you have available, try to get to know the subject and plan your questions to some extent as to what you'd like to ask. And that might just be a list of bullet points. They don't necessarily all have to be written out. And some quotations also, and references to throw into the conversation. And of course, if you are researching the information before you start the interview, then it's not as if you're desperately going around trying to find things to reference. You will already have found them. So keep that in mind while you're researching this stuff, to copy and paste a quotation or copy and paste a reference so that you can come back to that. The next thing that I would do would be to send a courtesy email. When you're getting close to the time of the interview, perhaps a couple of days beforehand, send a courtesy email, because amazingly people do forget. So far, touch wood, I have not forgotten that an interview is going to happen. I'm no doubt it's going that will happen one day to me, but it has happened the other way around. Even quite some famous people who I will not mention have forgotten, and I've sat there at the computer with Skype open and there's been nobody there on the other end. So it does happen. So in order to avoid that, I think it's a good idea to send a courtesy email a day or two beforehand. When it comes to the actual conversation, now again, this is what I do, and I'm not saying everybody has to do it this way, but I like to spend 10 to 15 minutes just chatting with my guest to develop a rapport. That's not going to work with everybody, because there are some people who are very, very busy, and you know that 60 minutes from now they're going to be talking to somebody else, and so you really do want to get on with the conversation, and they want to get on with the conversation as quickly as possible. But generally, where people do have more time, I do think it works very well to spend those 10 to 15 minutes just trying to get to know that person a little bit. And I would say this helps with the interview itself. It's not wasted time. I think it actually saves time in the long run. It helps to clarify the subject that you're going to be talking about, to refresh the subject in your own mind and in your guest's mind. Because just because they know their subject doesn't mean it's absolutely fresh at that moment. And of course, as an interviewer, you're going to have a certain angle that they may not be familiar with. It gives time to anticipate difficulties that might arise. So you can check the biographical details of the person. You can warn them of difficult questions that might come up. And something that I always do is to mention what I call the gap phenomenon. And that is when I'm recording with Skype recorder, and I'll talk about that in a minute. When I'm recording with Skype recorder, I find that this happens when my guest is speaking, and that's being recorded on one stereo track. If I make noises on the other stereo track, perhaps I do too much of this, I go, oh, that's very interesting, while they're talking, I find later when I listen to the recording that their voice has been cut out. It's just the way the software works. If I speak over them, then it means bits are cut out. And of course, then some of it can become unintelligible when you listen to it later on. So I warn my guest of what I call this gap phenomenon. And I say, I'm going to keep quiet largely while you're speaking. The reason why I say that to them is because I have had people stop mid-sentence and say to me, are you still there? So it's... you know, they think I'm not listening or I've gone away somewhere. So I think it's a good idea to warn them that while they're speaking, I will tend not to interject like that. So all this 10 to 15 minutes does give the opportunity to discuss these things and just to get to know them a little bit better. And I think that's very helpful. I also like to give something of a basic structure of the interview to my guest. So perhaps just list 4 or 5 sections of where the conversation is likely to go. And I do that because I like to avoid this happening. You know, the conversation starts and you ask your first question and then your guest goes off on a 20-minute soliloquy, essentially, covering everything. And you've got there another 12 questions which you've carefully thought through and ordered because you think that's the way the conversation's going to work best. And of course, at that point, what can you do? You have to keep saying, well, let's go back to such and such. Let's go back to such and such. And the whole thing feels extremely rocky and difficult to manage. So I find if you just go through and say, look, I want to cover these 4 basic sections, it tells your guest that perhaps they can space out what it is they're going to say and perhaps leave some things to later on. And that just helps with the intelligibility, just helps with the coherence of the interview. So what I thought I would do would be to share with you something from the cutting room floor, as it were, from my archive. And that is just a little bit of a conversation with the late, great Stanley Monteith, a bit of a chat that I had with him before an interview formally started. And I'm including this essentially as a curiosity. It would otherwise never be heard because it is just a little bit of pre-interview conversation. As I say, it's just a curiosity, but it does give an idea of how I approach things. And I do find it useful to do it this way. So here is how a conversation started off one day. Hello, Dr. Stan.
Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hello, can I help you?
Can you hear me? This is Julian speaking.
I'm sorry, let me just turn on my computer here so I can't. Okay, now what was that?
This is Julian speaking. Can you hear me?
No, we don't have a very good connection, but go ahead.
I don't know whether I can make myself any louder. Are you finding it difficult to hear me?
You're breaking up. Would you like to call me back? We don't have a good connection. I can't hear you.
I'll try again. Okay.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. And as that was a complete waste of time, I called Dr. Stan again.
Hello, this is Julian again.
Oh, you're much, much better. Oh, this is Julian. Hi,
it's
how are
Julian.
You?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Did the fellow who works with me ever get in touch with you?
No, he didn't.
He was supposed to, and about the Skype. We really aren't set up for Skype here at all.
Oh, I see. Well, it doesn't matter because I've managed to work out how Skype works with your landline, so we should be okay.
All right, fine. Well, do you want to do this now, or what would you like to do?
Would that be okay to do it now?
Sure it would. It would be better if I went downstairs and got into my big, easy chair where I ordinarily do this. Why don't you call me back in about 3 minutes? I'll just run downstairs.
Sure. Okay.
Thank you so much.
So I waited for Dr. Stan to go downstairs and get into his big easy chair, where he loved to do his interviews, and I called him back again.
Hello, Julian here again. Hello.
Okay, we're all set and ready to go.
Wonderful. You're in your easy chair now.
I'm in my easy chair here in my beautiful living room, and ready for... This is one of my favorite subjects. Most people really aren't concerned. They should be, because their lives are at stake.
Absolutely, yes. It's certainly a subject that does concern me.
Have you read my Population Control Agenda monograph?
I did, yes. I had a look at it. Yes, indeed. So what I've got to ask you really will be based upon what I read in those pages.
Very good.
So actually, I'll just briefly go through the order of the question so you know how it's going to run. Is that all right with you? Okay, so I'll, after introducing you again, because you've been on the show once before, I'll ask you, if I may, to just give a brief introduction to what your thesis is in that essay. And then I'd like to ask you, what started you off along that road of considering this, which I believe was your experience with the AIDS issue?
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh. Then I'd like to turn to one of the first things that you bring up, which is social Darwinism and eugenics with Margaret Sanger. So, because it's one of the first names that you bring up, I thought we'd start with her connection there. I might ask you about the role of Thomas Malthus as a background to all of this. And then I'd like to turn to your two main, which I think are your two main theses. One is that this is a radical agenda. It's not just about birth control, you know, but there are some really nasty views behind this. And you pick, I'll turn to some of the quotes that you have, one from David Graeber, and you have another quote from Jacques Cousteau. And if it's okay with you, can I ask you what you thought of Eric Pianka's statements back in 2006? If you remember that speech that he gave, which caused I think it was Forrest Mims, wasn't he, who commented upon it? And then yes, that's right. And then hot on the heels of that, I'd like to ask what you think of the Kissinger report, and what kind of effect you think that's had on population control through the United Nations and the like over the years.
Now, this is the report back in 1974, as I remember.
That's the one. I'm not sure that you mentioned that in that particular monograph, but I'm quite sure it's something that you're very familiar with. And I think it's important that people do have some awareness of that.
Okay, and now to a few technical bits and pieces that might be helpful, the things that I use and how I use them. I do everything here on a laptop. It's quite a big laptop with, I think it's a 17-inch screen, which I find is a nice substitute for a desktop computer. It's a few years old now, but it works very, very well. I also have two screens, two monitors. It's, in fact, an old Samsung. It's an LED flat screen television, but it's an old one that flickers rather badly. And so long as it keeps working, and fingers crossed it will keep working, it is useful to have that second monitor, which I've got connected here with an HDMI cable to the computer. Because particularly when you're doing an interview, it's great to have on the laptop screen the Skype page open, the Skype recorder, and monitor Audacity if I'm recording with that as well. But then to have this other monitor where you've got your bullet points of questions and you've got perhaps a couple of pages open of things that you want to refer to. So I do recommend having a second screen, a second monitor, if you can manage to do that. And I say this is an old TV that I'm working with here that flickers badly, but it does work. When it comes to microphone, I decided very early on that I was going to avoid using the condenser microphone inside the computer itself, because, of course, it's not great quality, but also you've got fan noise and hard drive noise inside the computer. So I invested immediately in a good USB microphone. I use an Editor's Keys USB microphone. It's very good. It wasn't actually hugely expensive. I think I got it on an offer, but it cost me around about the 50, I think it might have been £55, so that's not at all bad. It's a good microphone. Many people say you should use a pop filter to avoid the sort of plosive sounds distorting the recording. So I do use a pop filter, but I started off by using a stocking. And I thought, well, one day I'll buy myself a proper one, but I never have done. And I still use this stocking, which I just put over the microphone. And here's the difference. If I say puh, I'm using puh, puh, puh. I'm using the stocking at the moment. And if I take the stocking off, puh, 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 I don't know whether there's any difference there. Looking at the monitoring my recording here, there is a little bit of a difference. So puh, 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 that's without the stocking. And I'm going to put it back on again. There it goes. No doubt you can hear that. So the pop filter, makeshift pop filter's gone back on, and puh, 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 there's the difference. So there you go. I know that proper pop filters are not really that expensive, but if you want, you can save that money. And then, of course, we come to the business of actually recording the Skype call itself. And I use something called Skype Recorder, which is a free program. And I'm using version 4.6. There are new versions of that, but for the moment, I'm still using 4.6. I've had no problems with it. So far as I know, it's malware-free. Obviously, I can't guarantee that, especially with newer versions of it. I'm not going to guarantee anything with it at all. I'm just saying that I haven't had any problems with it myself, which you can find at voipcallrecording.com. I'll say that again, voipcallrecording.com. As I say, I'm not using the latest version, but the one that I am using, which is free, I'm not having any problems with, and it works very well. It's free if you use it for personal use, but of course, if you're running a business, then that's a different matter, and I think you might have to purchase a professional version of it then. I don't know about that. You'll have to find out about that for yourself. What it does is to record my voice and my guest's voice onto separate stereo channels and records at 128 kilobytes per second, so it's good quality. The only problem that I found with it is that if your guest is on a phone line, then it records both of you at phone quality. Now, maybe later versions of it have sorted that out, I don't know, but that's what I work with, and I have a workaround for that. So what I do now is to record my voice at the same time using Audacity, which is this free audio editing software, which I'll mention in a moment. And so that way, I record both my voice and my guest's voice at phone quality, but I also have another version of my voice at studio quality, and I can use that later on. So that's how I get around that problem. So as I say, I'm using this Audacity audio editing software, which is free. I find it absolutely fantastic. So far, I don't think I've found anything that I wanted to do that I haven't been able to do with Audacity, so I highly recommend that. So what I end up with is Skype Recorder produces an MP3 file of my voice and my guest's voice at phone quality. If it's Skype to Skype, then that's absolutely fine. It's both, you know, very good quality. But if it's Skype to phone, then they both come out at phone quality. And in that case, I'd be recording my voice using Audacity, and I end up with an Audacity project, which is high quality. So simply what I do in those cases is to drag the MP3 file onto the Audacity project. So I end up with three tracks, and then I delete the old poor quality track of my own voice, and I'm left with a phone recording of my guest and a studio quality track of my own voice, which I can then drag. I can drag them then to fit with it, with each other quite easily. I don't know whether that's clear, but maybe there's another way around that. I don't know, but if not, that might be helpful to somebody out there. I then like to edit. Now, people edit to different levels. Some people will take out just the worst things. I take out quite a lot, actually, because I try to keep my interviews not too long. There are some times when I accept that the information is important enough that I have to leave it in. But generally speaking, I try to move it as close to the hour as I can possibly manage that, which means I do have to cut out some things. Coughs and sneezes have to go. Extensive ums and ahs have to go. I just cannot bear listening to people speak when they're saying, you see, to my mind, that has to go because it gets in the way. Not everybody does that, but that's the way I do it. And obviously, the long things like the trips to the bathroom and that kind of thing, they have to go. I mean, there's no way that you could leave this in. Actually, I'll tell you what. Is it okay with you? I'll just take a quick bathroom break because I had a big cup of coffee and it's having an effect.
Sounds great. Yeah, I'll do that too.
Okay. All right. Have you got a glass of water as well? I always ask a guest.
I do. Yep.
Good. Okay. Yep. Catch you in a minute then.
Yep.
Are you there?
Hello.
Are you all right there?
Yeah, I am. Yeah.
All right. It sounded like you just dropped a whole load of saucepans or something. I don't know what happened.
It's an old Japanese house with sliding doors. Yeah.
Ah, right.
Yeah.
In fact, I thought that I was going to... be later than you coming back to the microphone. I was going to have to apologise because I came into the room and then I shut the door. And if I shut the door, then the cat starts clawing. So I have to leave it ajar. So I had to take my headphones off again, go back to the door and open it just for the cat. There we are.
Well, my cat is very well fed, so let's hope she doesn't come and start sort of, hanging around the door and meowing.
Best, of course, to get rid of things like that. And that was from my conversation with Simon Crims from a while ago. So, Simon, if you're listening, I'm sure you never realised that I would include that massive longer in a podcast, but I did so really just for a humorous diversion. So the next thing, of course, is you got to add your music last. Again, it's one of those things that seems very obvious, but can probably save a headache or two if I mention it now, if you've not done this before. Put your music in last and make sure that you have permission, of course. Check the CC license if you're using somebody else's material. I got mine from the Free Music Archive, which I can therefore recommend. So that's freemusicarchive.org. As I say, check the license of the music before you use it. In my case, I can use the music so long as I don't actually charge for these MP3s, which of course I don't. Something important, which I know not all podcasters do, and I do highly recommend this, is to make sure, if you do use Audacity, make sure that your tracks are set at mono. Otherwise, if you save the ultimate MP3 file as a stereo file, you have the interviewer on one channel and the interviewee on the other channel. So a left channel for one person and a right channel for the other person. And that can be quite problematic, actually, if your listeners have got dodgy headphones or the computer speakers are not balanced properly. They can end up hearing just one voice, because the other voice is totally isolated on the other speaker that's not working properly. So it's much better if you set them both at mono, then both voices are balanced across both speakers. Now, I find this problem particularly annoying when I'm listening to a podcast at night, and I sometimes go to sleep listening to a podcast, and I have an earpiece in one ear, and of course my other side of my face on the pillow. And I can't do that if the podcast is recorded in the way I've just described, because I can only hear one voice. I can't hear both. So I did make a mistake like that once with a Paul Craig Roberts interview. Maybe some of you know which one it was. And I had quite a lot of emails come my way saying, what's wrong with this? I can only hear one side. So I do recommend that. In fact, what I do is not to set both tracks to mono. What I do is to duplicate the whole lot. And I set one voice to left and right, and I set the other voice to left and right. Now, whether there's any difference, I don't know, but be aware of that problem. I also highly recommend checking and listening to the recording before you start to actually produce the MP3. You've finished your editing, you've added the music, check it through, because sometimes something has gone wrong. especially if you've edited things out, you find that there's a problem and you've dragged one voice over the top of the other. This has happened sometimes. I don't think I've actually released an MP3 with that problem on it, but it's something that can happen. And I once almost did, and that was with the interview with Simon Pardo from votenone.org.uk. And this is the kind of thing that can happen.
Do you want an example?
Yeah, actually, an example would be good because it's still a little esoteric. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. The project that really prompted it was one where we were researching the public debate around GM crops.
Well, I can see the why people
villages around the UK, which were
with,
GM crops
from MIT
test sites.
Ago, does in fact have. Fortunately, as I say, I didn't release the recording with that kind of error on it. So do check that out before you actually turn your project into an MP3 file. What I would also recommend is not to make it into an MP3 file straight away. There is a stage that you can do first, which will improve the quality of the recording, and that is to export to a WAV file first. And when you do that, you've got your WAV file of the whole project, then to use a program called Levelator, which is another free program, and what it does is to level the volume of the respective tracks. And again, this gets over that problem where one voice is very loud and one voice is very soft, which can be very distracting when people are listening. It's still available via archive.org. You can go to, actually, it has a Wikipedia page with a link to that. Now, as this is an old program, it was discontinued in 2012. It's not supported anymore. I can't guarantee that this is now safe. I think I'm using the latest version 2.1.1. I downloaded it a very long time ago. I've had no problems with it, but as I say, I can't vouch for its safety now because it's such a long time. But all I can say is I found it very good and I've not had a problem since the time that I downloaded it, which was a couple of years ago. Well, all you simply do is to take your WAV file and you drag it onto the open box of Levelator 2, and it immediately starts to process this WAV file and outputs another WAV file, a corrected WAV file, into the same folder where your original WAV file was stored. So it's very convenient, and it gives it the same name but just says output. So it might say interview with Joe Bloggs .wav, and now it says interview with Joe Bloggs output. .wav. Then you can convert that into an MP3 file. And what I do, I'm not saying you have to do it this way, but this is what I do. I drag that then back onto Audacity and I export as an MP3, 128 kilobytes per second. And I do another one at 48 kilobytes per second so that people have different qualities to listen to. I then use a program, again free, called MP3 Tag, which allows me to put the podcast logo onto the MP3 file. Again, as I say, it's free. I've had no problems with it. I can't vouch for it. I'm using version 2.70. I'm only saying that's what I use, and I've had no problem with it. So essentially, that's it. There are lots of other things, of course, that I could say about running a website, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with that anyway. No doubt I have missed some other things, but I hope that some of that will be useful to some people. And as I say, if you have anything that could save me time or there's something that I could do to improve what I do, then please do let me know. That would be absolutely great. So I do apologise that Tom Secker's not coming on this week. We will be doing that in a few weeks from now. Next week, I hope to do some kind of response to the Conservative Party conference that's going to be taking place in Manchester next week. And my intention is to do some kind of response to their proposed extremism disruption orders, which I think does need to be addressed. The following week, I hope that we'll be joined by David Conn of truthsleuth.net for a discussion on the so-called People's Temple of the Disciples of Christ and on its manipulative founder Jim Jones, under whose so-called leadership 918 people were killed in 1978 in northwestern Guyana. The week after that, I hope to be speaking to Manoj Retata, who is head of the South Asian Forum of the UK Evangelical Alliance, and he'll be joining me to share his really inspiring testimony and to discuss his approach to evangelism and Christian engagement with people from Asian backgrounds. So that is it for today. As I say, I do hope that some of this information will be helpful to somebody, and I do look forward to some feedback that might be helpful to me as well. So that's it for today. You've been listening to me, Julian Charles, of themindrenewed.com, and I very much look forward to speaking to you in the very near future.
Hi, Nikki. I'm ever so sorry. Everything's going.
Did we lose all that?
Yeah, no, we didn't lose it all, but we lost the connection because my next door neighbour phoned yet again to about this wretched rabbit. Everything's going wrong this evening. Is there any chance
you
that
know,
we?
You know, well, I have a pretty flexible schedule, Julian.
Yeah,
want to go catch that rabbit, and then we'll do it like later today or tomorrow morning would be okay with me. I'm free this week pretty much.
Could we?
So and since it's not live,
yeah,
we can do it whenever, right?
Yeah, that's right. We could. dear, this is just absolutely ridiculous. You know, I feel so embarrassed about it now.
Are you kidding me? If you knew my life.
How can a little rabbit disturb so much? It's incredible. But well, there you go.
You can't catch them.